Dave Douglas, and that's the music of Kazem De George, great tenor player, composer, band leader. His new album, I Insist, is on Greenleaf Music, and we're really proud to present not only the new work, but his wife, Sammy Stevens, is singing, and we're going to talk to him today and learn a lot more about all that great music. Please come and join us. Greenleafmusic.com. is the place to get all of this, including everything in the catalog when you subscribe, and all kinds of news about great communities of players and people playing all over the world. So hope you'll join us. Thanks for listening. Here we go with Kazem De George. Kazem De George, thank you so much for joining me. It's great to see you, even though it's Zoom still.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're in Brooklyn right now, right?
Yep, East Flatbush, Brooklyn.
Awesome. I love the record, obviously. I'm so proud it's on Greenleaf. We were listening to the opening track, Things Line Up, and I like to begin these conversations just asking about your musical beginnings, you know, not just the where you're from, but, you know, what was it that first attracted you to wanting to make music?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm also really proud that that record is on Greenleaf, so I think that's mutual. And yeah, talking a little bit about my beginnings, when I was a kid, I moved around a little bit, but when I was around 9, we settled in the Bay Area in California. And I had been playing music before, playing like piano and cello and stuff in school, taking piano lessons. But when we moved there, my parents took me to a guy who taught woodwinds. And I sort of gravitated to the saxophone. And I remember the first day I got an alto saxophone, I just started playing it, and I had a concept that I associated with it, which is that you would like improvise on that instrument that I never had with piano. And I always felt like piano was this like rigid thing where I only ever practiced like reading music and practicing for my recital or whatever. But then when I got the saxophone, I was like, man, this is awesome. I can just play. And at the time I didn't even know the notes, but just going for it. So, that felt like a pretty good beginning for me getting into improvising and playing. I just had a lot of excitement for it. Mm-hmm. And in high school, I did this program called Oaktown Jazz Workshops that was led by Khalil Shaheed. Oh. He's a great trumpet player who passed away a couple of years ago, maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And he became a really important mentor for me through Oaktown. And yeah, it was a great program. They basically would have like a drummer, a piano player, a bass player, a horn player, like professional cats come in. And then the workshop is that the kids, we would come in and play with them. So you could always really learn from people from experience, and you get the opportunities to play with really good players. And then they would take us out on gigs and stuff. So that was cool. That was like my real, 'cause when I was in high school, there was no band in my high school, so that was like my music world time.
Yeah. Oh, that's so sad that, public school bands, it's a thing of the past.
Had no band, especially in the inner city schools. And I teach I teach in inner city schools in New York right now, schools. And yeah, it's like, I'm a real remedial effort there as far as the arts go, because they're so slashed, like all the budgets.
Yeah.
So that was my school.
You found your way to the music and that, yeah. That image of, having sort of more or less classical piano lessons and then picking up a horn and suddenly feeling like, oh, I get it. You can just play.
Exactly.
You know, I got a trombone when I was 7 and I had a similar sort of epiphany. I think it's because you can't see the key, you know, you're just sort of blind to where the notes are and what they are, and just sort of very physical reaction. In the notes and in all the, and in talking to you about this record, you know, you're really talking a lot about the cultural background and the diaspora and your Caribbean heritage. And I just wonder if that was also part of the musical experience for you.
Yeah. Well, growing up, my dad was a huge influence on me musically. He is a musician. He plays drums. Never was a professional musician, but was always an amateur musician, like ever since he was a kid, loved playing drums and banging on stuff. And huge music lover, and had a really diverse like listening breadth. And so when I was like a little kid, remember we would listen to like Shape of Jazz to Come and Burning Spear and Bob Marley and dub music and Calypso and Weather Report, John Coltrane, Chick Corea, Keith Jarrett, Paul Simon. Just like a dizzying array of music, and a lot of it Caribbean music, a lot of calypso and reggae. So growing up, that was always just like part of my world too, just all the music that my dad loved.
That's so awesome. We were talking about public schools, but you know, then you got to remember like all the music you hear in your house,
right?
You're little and you're growing up, and nobody's saying, you know, pay attention to this. This is the important stuff. It's just like all those artists you just mentioned, you're just sort of taking them in like a bath.
Totally. I remember that. I have a lot of like childhood memories of looking back and it's like, oh yeah, we were listening to Joao Gilberto or whatever.
Wow, that's great. You know, Miguel Zenon brought your music to me and I'm really grateful, and I'm sure he was an influence for you as well.
Probably
through being in Boston, right? Through all the schools up there. But I feel like one of the things that's really interesting about the record, you know, it's called I Insist, and of course it's the tip of the hat to Max Roach, We Insist. And so it's a very personal statement. And I notice you dedicated it to your mother.
Yeah.
So sweet. I mean, it's like gives the whole tinge of I Insist and the spirit of your statement a much more gentle and maybe self-reflexive vibe to it. I mean, do you see it that way? Or
absolutely. Yeah, I'm glad you said all of that. That's where I'm at with it. My mom passed away.
I'm so sorry.
When I was 20, she had cancer and had like a really tough fight with cancer for a long time. Like a lot of my memories of just growing up was like, she was sick. She was like always sick for a really long time, and then she passed away. And she was always so supportive of me. And so was my dad. I love my parents. In different ways than my dad would. And she would have, if she was around when I was making this album, I know she would have been there pushing me to do this and pushing me to do that and helping me along the way. So definitely felt like since she wasn't there for that, that it was, I don't know, just important for me to dedicate my first album to her. And she's was a really socially minded person during her life. And a lot of the sort of issues that Max Roach is dealing with and I Insist and a lot of the kind of things I'm thinking about when I make my music definitely would have been at the front of her mind in terms of like social justice, those kind of stuff. She was a very like militant protester kind of stuff ever since her college days, and was an educator and working through education to like improve outcomes for Black kids in public school, like we were alluding to some of the problems that there are there. So definitely feel strongly about the dedication to her.
Wow, that's it just provides such a different kind of context for the album, because, and I was going to play, you know, it sort of leads me to this next track that I was going to play some of, which is called Balance. And, you know, your music is really balanced, and you have this, you know, beautiful, probing, but very lyrical way of playing the horn, you know, gorgeous sound, but it's also, I deal with this a lot. It's not what people would think of as quote unquote protest music. And then, you know, I feel like everyone's living their own protest or situation or whatever it is. And so I really relate to it. And what you said about your mom, being an activist in that way and you feeling the same way about it and then expressing it through this sense of balance and feeling of you know, pieces coming together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean,
I guess that wasn't a question. Sorry.
No, I can respond to what you said, though. I think that I hear what you're saying about like how it can maybe not sound like protest music, or it's not like explicitly protest music. Like, for example, like some of like Nina Simone's music that is like very explicitly protest music, and everything about the context of some of those songs was about like making a very specific political statement. And I think that I definitely, there's a place, I think, for maybe me in the future to do that kind of stuff. But in this album, it's more of just, I feel like maybe an introduction to me and who I am. And I just believe that I'm trying to embody all of these things through the music and just through my life. And like these kinds of messages of protest, those are just the things that I believe. And similarly, the music that you hear is, that's what I believe in terms of music. And it's all one thing, because that's me, you know? So that's kind of where I'm at with that part of like how the message comes through. So I hope it gets through to the listener, but I do realize it's like not, I'm not necessarily spelling it out all the time.
Well, you're spelling out who you are in the music, and that's the most important thing.
Right. That's what I hope for.
Balance. Great band too. I want to talk about the band a little bit later. I noticed in your material, your printed matter, you name check three artists, and I love the way you did it, because I feel a real kinship in that way. You said John Coltrane, Jay Dilla, and Joel Gilberto are three examples of where your music is coming from. And I'm a little ahead of you, but from my generation on, it's sort of those barriers between different styles, different traditions, and different lineages and ways of playing just collapsed. Mm-hmm. Has that been important for you?
Yeah, absolutely. My focus musically, I think, for most of my life I realized in more recent years that, I've really been focused on this one thing, which is like sort of black music, and specifically black music in the Americas. Mm-hmm. So like growing up doing Oaktown jazz in high school, I feel like I was really studying black American music. And then I lived in Cuba for a year and got to study that music for a long time, I've been really obsessed with like João Gilberto and specific Brazilian styles, and I spent a lot of my time studying that music as well. And it became clear that it was like sort of that was the thing tying a lot of the music that was really drawing me in, was that it was music from the African diaspora. And so I certainly have been seeing the walls between those genres fall away.
Yeah.
Like you're saying. And that's not to say that I feel like there should be a wall between Black music and other music. That's not what I'm saying. But within what I've been focusing on, like, absolutely. And I'm just starting to see the connections between, you know, how when you listen to Miles Davis play the trumpet, mm-hmm. it's just like how somebody might play the drum in another tradition mm-hmm. and stuff like that, and how everything kind of is one thing. So I totally, what you say makes sense to me.
And then within that concept, I mean, the tunes on the album, you know, you're dealing with a lot of really interesting harmonic and melodic ideas. So like when you sit down to write these tunes, and I know that you know, this developed with this group of players over a number of years. You know, where does it, what's your basic starting point zero?
Well, I write at the piano. Mm-hmm. And I love chords, so usually just sit down and play chords, and I like will sort of, and that's something that, well, hold on, let me back up a little bit. I feel like for a long time when I was playing, like around when I first got to college, I really felt like one of my weakest points was harmony and playing the changes, and I would try to play tunes, and I had a good ear, and I could hear what I wanted to play, but a lot of times the real nuance of the harmony, I wasn't really making it. And that's something that I think Miguel helped me with a lot. And he was hard on me at times to really be more clear harmonically. Mm. And since then, I've mentioned that I've been really studying a lot of Brazilian music. And that, I think, has been a really good study for me to improve that stuff by like really analyzing the way that they do voice leading in that music, where they can have some really dissonant moments that always sound completely beautiful. And the dissonance is always perfectly treated in terms of the resolution and where you know, just moving from one chord to the next. So I feel like I've really learned, I have a really good sense of that now just from studying the way João plays guitar and a lot of these other great Brazilian players, and just Tom Jobim's music and Huinga, and I think I'm saying his name wrong, but.
Melissa Aldana talked about Huinga too.
Yeah.
And that's how she pronounced it. So I think you got it.
Good. I think that I developed that, and it was always for me something that I studied on piano. So then going to write, I feel like that stuff that I've been learning about harmony that I've been felt like a real weakness, and now I'm kind of turning it into a strength and trying to be able to use that harmony as a starting point for writing tunes. And then once I have harmony worked out, usually I'm singing the melody. And then once again, that goes into the same practice of I was learning João Gilberto's music, mm-hmm. like by playing it on keys and singing. So like I'll sing the songs in Portuguese and try to basically cop exactly his voicings. Yeah. And so like that kind of process of playing and singing translated into sort of my compositional approach, where I'm playing the chords and singing the melodies that I hear. And usually that becomes the melody to the tune. So that's kind of my main process. Yeah.
That's awesome. And it also, you know, by that point, you've also defined the form, the structure of the song.
Right.
And then that in its own turn informs the way the band improvises together.
Yeah. And then I play it with those guys, and I get to play with some really great musicians here in New York, and they always flip my idea on its head and turn it around and give me a bunch of other ideas. And then that changes the way we play the music.
Yeah, we should mention Isaac Wilson on piano, and we'll hear some Wurlitzer in a little bit, and Tyrone Allen on bass, and Adam Aruda on drums.
That's right.
It's a great sounding group, and I know you guys are out playing some gigs, and I'm hoping to be able to get a chance to come and hear it live after this long period of not hearing so much live music.
Yeah,
but there's someone else on your record that somebody I think you know a little bit, is a little close to you.
Yeah.
there's a vocalist named Sammy Stevens. And I know that she's involved in a lot of other projects of her own and all kinds of things. But in addition to all the other music on this album and all the other music that you play, you guys have done some things together, and I thought I'd play a little excerpt and then see if maybe your wife, Sammy Stevens, would come in and join us for a second. So it's called The Flower Movie. People can look that up on YouTube. And it's you, Kazemde, under the name KGB, Kazemde George Beats. I believe you're making these tracks.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you a little bit about that, but also Sammy is singing, and there's this great film that goes with it. So I'll play a little excerpt of the music here. It's a podcast. It's an audio medium, so people can't see what's happening in the movie. But Sammy Stevens, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for having me. Hello.
Where was the film? Where was that? Looks like
We were at the beginning of the pandemic. I was basically like, okay, we need to leave New York City, this one bedroom apartment, or I'm going to cry every day. That was, I think I held you hostage with my vibe a little bit. So we went to Maine to stay in my parents' ski cabin at Sugarloaf.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, so we were in an A-frame right on the river. And we were there for 6 months, which just seems crazy to say now, like looking back on it. It's such a blur.
Wow. 6 months. I didn't know that.
That's a long time. Like 6 months is a really long time.
From when COVID hit around mid-March until till August, end of August, I think we were there. Just in a cabin, extremely remote.
Yeah.
We saw a bear outside of our cabin. That's how remote it was.
So thought COVID was bad and then.
This project was something that we made during that time. And if you are able to find the video, you'll see where we were because it was all shot there in the woods. Yeah. And Sammy basically produced this whole video herself and acted in it and wrote it and did everything. So I was pretty amazed with that. And it's a fun little story about a flower. And I made all the beats. So,
yeah, I wanted to get into doing video work. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, you know, what better time than 6 months in a cabin in Maine. So I have like a nice camera now, but that thing I just made on my phone. I mean, I didn't edit it on my phone, but I shot it all just on my phone. And so it's a little like lo-fi, it's a little DIY vibe, but I stand by it.
iPhone cameras are getting pretty good.
Yes.
Passable, I think.
Yeah.
Well, and it goes great with the music. Were you making the music in the cabin too, Kazemde?
Yeah, Sammy heard me making all this music. And the kind of like one unique feature of this project for me, like musically, is just that the drums never change for the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
There's just one drum beat that I there was one day I made this drum loop and I really, really liked it. And then I had this one little synthesizer and then a MIDI controller that I was using, and I just made a ton of different variations on this one rhythmic structure.
Yeah. There's even like and a full song or two on there. Like
added a couple. Yeah, I added a couple of full songs that I had written and just like made a little like a digital version.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was for about a month there. It was kind of just this one endless beat that I was working on. And we picked the best ones that I made and made them into Flower Moon.
Yeah, we put them in like an order.
Yeah.
Putting them in order was really difficult because it was like I had this narrative in mind and I wanted the shots to all match up, you know, with the vibe of each beat. So that was, I remember that being kind of a difficult thing to work through because there would be like beats that you really wanted on there and I'd be like, but I don't have a shot for the beat and that doesn't make sense.
But once you picked the music, then you edited the video to the sequence of the music that you'd made.
Yeah, I think I wrote out like all the shots I wanted to do, and then I kind of went through and listened to all the options that we had for different beats, tried to line them up.
Yeah.
It was hard. I haven't thought about this in a while.
Great job.
It's good you had all that time on your hands up there.
Yeah,
we were also practicing.
Yeah.
A lot of the time.
A ton, yeah.
Practicing, working out.
It was not a bad time, honestly. We really just like cooked and ate and practiced music. I played classical piano, which probably forgotten all of it.
You started playing classical piano and electric bass. You were playing like funk bass lines all afternoon.
That's always a handy skill to have.
Man, I always say bass players get the most work. I'm like, if we have a kid, I want to just tell them, be a musician, but be a bass player. Be smart. Go play bass.
It's true. Bass players are always busy. In any genre, any style.
Yeah.
So, Sammy, you sing on the album too, and you wrote some lyrics, didn't you?
Yes.
Did you write the lyric to Happy Birthday?
I did, yeah. There's two songs on the album that have lyrics. There's Skylight and Happy Birthday. Yeah, and I wrote the lyrics.
And was that, I'm just curious, like, was that, you know, the overall concept of the album being I Insist and this sort of real, you know, personal statement about identity, were you thinking about that in bringing these lyrics into it, or was this all just part of a bigger process of what Kazemde was making and it coming together?
You know, I would say that this is more, Happy Birthday for me was more related to the R&B tradition, but like by way of the hip hop tradition, because that song is actually kind of like sort of a diss track a little bit. So, but I'm talking a little S on that track.
Yeah. It's not a 10-minute diss track, but it is. Yeah.
Right. So, but I don't know. It's, what can I say about that song? I honestly wrote those lyrics so long ago at this point.
I guess that answers my question. I was just thinking, you know, right. It feels to me like the album just came together from months and months of all these different forces and ideas and musical things coming together. The fact that you play together and there's a lot of wordless vocal where you're unison with the saxophone. Mm-hmm. It's so cool. I mean, it's so, different, I think.
Yeah, well, I feel like I can ask Sammy to do basically anything, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
She'll sing in another language. She'll sing really, really, really high. She'll sing really, really, really low. She'll sing some crazy fast thing that most singers can't sing. She'll sing like an opera singer. She could sing like some funky soul music, and she could sing like a jazz ballad. And like, man, if you want to hear her singing really versatile stuff, you should check out the band that she's the lead singer in, Tradici Bacci.
Okay. Simon.
What did you say?
Simon, right?
Yeah.
Simon Haynes band. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Tradici Bacci.
Tradici Bacci.
Tradici Bacci.
So I just feel blessed that that's who I'm working with. So anything I'm going to ask her to do, we can do. And so, like, a song like Happy Birthday, a song like Skylight, or a song like Things Line Up, and she can just do that stuff.
But moreover, I think we have a lot of the same like priorities when it comes to music and like really serving the song, like really just like committing to whatever the song is doing. And like, you know, like I feel like it's my job with every song I'm doing to just like to commit to it and to do whatever is going to work best on that song. So mm-hmm. I think that does mean I'll sound really different on different songs for sure.
Yeah. And
it's a different approach than a lot of people, I think, in jazz today, where it's like the opposite, essentially what you just said, which is it's like, I have a personal style and I'm going to do my personal style on whatever song I play.
Right.
Not saying that's bad, but like, it's really different than what you just said.
Yeah. And
it's interesting.
And I can't help but feel like that question then kind of like resonates for me as well. It's just a little more difficult to answer, you know, the whole question of like, how could you be an artist with like a voice when you're just, you know, adapting to every song, when you're changing so radically, depending on the context. Mm. And, that question used to really kind of gnaw at me, like feeling like I didn't have any sort of identity. But I mean, I'm almost 30. I don't know. I feel like
so old.
I'm enough.
Oh my God, almost 30. I'm
just very old now. No, I mean, but you know what I mean. When I'm like 18, I'm like, well, I don't know. Yeah. What do I sound like? I don't know.
No, I know exactly what you mean. But I think what you said, you know, serving the song, you know, that's the central concept right there. And then you're gonna find, you know, your musical identity comes about from all the different ways that you want to serve songs. And I'm sure that goes for all the other projects you're in as well, right?
Yeah. And I think there are some really important musical ideas that I bring with me everywhere I go, you know, like phrasing is really important to me. Mm-hmm. Rhythm is really important to me, like rhythmic ideas.
Nice.
You know?
Yeah.
So, if that's where I'm coming from.
But is Tredici Bacci, you feel like that's your main other, but I see you out there as a leader also.
Yeah. I'm a singer-songwriter kind of person these days. And that's probably where I put the most of my energy just because, you know, I'm doing all the writing for that. And
yeah, Sammy's a prolific songwriter. She's constantly writing new music.
Great.
Her own projects.
Look forward to hearing more of that.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm just finishing up mixing on an album. I'll send it to you.
Please do.
What do we think?
Please do. And I want to congratulate you guys on your wedding again.
Thank you.
I mean, I wish that I'd been there, but the pictures were amazing. Thousands of words worth of photographs. And it's wonderful to have this record happening. So I'm going to play a little bit of this diss track, and it's called Happy Birthday. And thanks for joining us, Sammy.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Nice to see you. Bye.
Birthday, but nobody called you on the phone. Deleted. But you don't tell the truth. You're no baby Ruth. He is striking out, but all those memories and that confusion. Do you think you're good? So I'll say happy birthday, but you won't remember in a day. You faded, cause you had too much to drink of your own Kool-Aid. So take a shower, roll a big one.
So there's the famous Wurlitzer.
I love it. I love the Wurlitzer, man. I'm really glad I went with that for the record.
Was it Isaac's choice or was it?
No, it was my choice. Uh-huh. I really like the sound of electric keyboard in this type of music. I think that for me, it reminds me of like playing on a gig, because a lot of times on the gigs that I'm playing this music on, like, there's no piano, you know?
Right.
So the keyboard that we're playing is like a Nord or something like that. So a Wurlitzer is basically like much better than a Nord, but a similar kind of vibe. So this just reminds me, that sound reminds me more of like what it sounds like on the gig. As opposed to piano, I don't know, it just sounds more like orchestral or something.
Yeah, well, it's got a warm sound to it. I like the Wurlitzer because it's actually a physical object striking another physical object. You know, it's a percussion instrument. It's not like a electronic source.
Right.
So it's got a beautiful, rich.
I find the small intervals on the Wurlitzer to be more dissonant than on a piano. Something about the overtones of the notes.
Yeah.
Like if you play a half step on a Wurlitzer, you know, like C and C sharp at the same time,
yeah,
it sounds more dissonant to me than C and C sharp on a piano. Yeah. I love it, man. Like when you play like, you know, certain voicings with half steps and whole steps in them, it sounds really crunchy.
Huh.
Which I love that.
Really interesting. I think maybe because there's more sustain, but maybe also just by dint of what's making the sound, there's more harmonic overtones, and so that creates more rub.
Yeah, that's what I think it is. It's like more harmonic overtones.
Hmm. Yeah. Wow, that's so cool. Tyrone and Adam, how did you all come together? Was that a Boston thing, or is that?
I think I may have met Adam once or twice in Boston, but we definitely linked up in New York. All of us, except for me, Simon, and Isaac, we all went to school in NEC.
New England Conservatory.
New England Conservatory in Boston.
Yeah.
But as for Adam and Tyrone, I just met them sort of on the scene in Brooklyn and New York, playing around with people. I feel like all of us were part of sort of community of, I feel like it's like the Brooklyn side of the New York jazz scene, but just like the young cats. I feel like it's a very specific scene where people are really interconnected. We play together a lot and everybody is killing. There's so many great players. And I don't know, it feels like a real community. People know each other. We go to each other's gigs. We hang out. We're like kind of all friends.
Yeah.
So I feel like I tapped into that to meet those guys.
No, it is a kind of amazing scene and there's so many great players, but it's mostly these neighborhoods. You know, you said you live in East Flatbush.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Crown Heights, Bushwick, Brownsville, that sort of area that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly, right? I guess Lefferts.
Lefferts Gardens, Bed-Stuy.
Yeah.
And over to Park Slope. Yeah, there's a ton of musicians who live around there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of musicians from older generations as well who live around there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're kind of right in it. There's a lot of great gigs in Manhattan that go on, but then when there's a cool gig in that neighborhood, it's always surprising who comes out because they live right down the street.
Right.
Right.
There's no commute.
Right.
Wow, that's great. I got to get into Brooklyn more. I lived there so long. I thought I would never leave, and then my wife eventually convinced me. To get out of the city proper, and it's nice, but this scene in Brooklyn, it's kind of like what I remember from 30 years ago, and it's great to see all this music happening, including yours. I wanted to play this piece Haiti and ask you to speak directly to the traditions that brought this about for you.
Yeah, so Haiti is a song that is very loosely derived from like influence of Haitian music.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it really is coming out of the J Dilla sort of tradition, because originally it was a beat that I made. So I made Haiti on my computer, but I was messing around with the sort of like most classic African bell pattern.
Yeah.
Which is da 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 da. Mm-hmm. And I'm working on all the displacements of that.
Mm.
And so Haiti was sort of part of me thinking about that. So the big rub in that song for me is that the the hi-hat and the piano are both playing that rhythm, but they're displaced from each other. So it's like a kind of interesting rhythmic tension that also, like, if you play it right, creates a grid, creates a 16th note grid.
Wow.
So like the piano player is going like 1, 2, 3, 4, da, 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 starting on the beat.
Mm-hmm.
The hi-hat is not starting on beat one, but starting on the 16th note right after that. So it's 3, 4, 1, ta, 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 1, ta, 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 1, ta, ta, ta. So those two rhythms together is kind of an interesting rub, and that's just a rhythm that comes from Africa and then is in Haiti and in Cuba and all these places. Yeah, so that's kind of the idea behind that one.
Yeah, that is great. You were talking about the chords while we were listening to it, and the way that that common tone in the melody just moves through all of them, and it always seems to turn back around to that altered chord. And then there's the whole rhythmic grid that you were describing before we played it.
Mm-hmm.
So you all play that so well. So are you playing live with the band now? Now that
we're
opening up?
As I alluded, like it's, I feel like I'm part of a big,
uh-huh.
big community. So we're definitely back playing. It's been the last time that I played with that band would have been, we'll see, like for our release show, for example, Tyrone was on tour with Jasmine Horn, so he couldn't play with us. So I got another great player, Alon Near, to play bass.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we're doing it. It's kind of a rotating cast of characters. Recently, I've been playing a lot with drummer Kayvon Gordon.
Mm.
And I kind of have a trio setup that I've been doing with Kayvon and Tyrone and me. So I've been really excited about playing with those guys. I'm also going to be going to California playing with Chris McCarthy on keys. It's another piano player from NEC.
Great. Where are you going to play in California?
We're playing at the Black Cat in San Francisco.
Nice.
That's the week of Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And then we're doing a couple other shows the rest of that weekend, including at Oaktown Jazz Workshops on December 5th.
Great. Nice.
And
then I'm sure there's a whole batch of new tunes coming.
Yes. I'm so excited about the new tunes. Honestly, it's like musicians always say this, but it's so true. It's like by the time you're putting out the album, it just feels old. You're like, oh, man, this stuff is old. I still like to sometimes play some of the tunes on iInsist, but
yeah,
largely I've got a whole new batch of stuff that
and
I'm playing.
Is there a focus around the statement for the next one?
I don't know. I couldn't put it into words yet. The new music is for me very difficult and it's rhythmically and harmonically very involved. So I'm not ready yet. I need to keep playing it because it's really hard. And I have a clear vision of what I want to be able to sound like playing this music. So
wow, that's great.
Yeah, I don't know. I will say this. I've been studying a lot of African music through the lens of Cuba recently, even though I know we've mentioned this before, it's something that I've studied in the past, but I'm continuing to study it. I have a teacher who lives in Mexico. His name's Manly Lopez, and he's a Cuban percussionist. He lives in Mexico, though, and I've been studying with him online. And I do my lessons right here. And I have my conga playing güiro music and palo music and bembe music, which are all styles of African music that have been preserved through Cuba. And so it's like sort of a very specific style of these African rhythms.
Yeah.
And I've been learning to play them, and it's super fascinating. And I feel really lucky because the drummer who I mentioned, Kayvon, also studied with Manly and is also super interested in these rhythms. And we've been practicing them together. And I think that I've been, even if I'm not specifically like going to play a song that's a güiro or play a song that's a palo, a lot of those rhythmic concepts I'm internalizing at the moment. And so when I feel stronger with all that stuff, I think you'll hear it on the next record for sure.
I can't wait to hear that. That's so great. And in the meantime, I hope you still play these tunes because they still sound fresh and new to me. From this record. And, we're super thrilled that this is happening at Greenleaf, and that as a result, I've gotten to hear all these other players in the community that you're talking about. So,
very well, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on the label,
and thank you for coming on the podcast.
That as well.
You know, I think I just like I said to you earlier. You know, just to have musicians talking about music with musicians. I mean, I guess maybe it's kind of nerdy, but at the same time, you know, I think it's, I learned a lot talking to you, and I always feel like, you know, getting into somebody's creative thought process is always so enlightening. So thank you for doing it and for being here.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm always down to nerd out. Kind of my thing.
This is the title track from I Insist, and I'll talk to you real soon. Thanks for listening. That was I Insist from Kazemde George. And if you're still listening to this, please now go to greenleafmusic.com and join us over there, where you can hear all these episodes and you can subscribe and get the entire catalog. Hope to see you there soon. Thanks.